So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to Review Man.
Jericho countering Austin. By him, he hit the lights off. The referee's got the handle. Triple H has got the damn sledgehammer. Not this again. No. Triple H hit Austin in the cradle. Pinlock took Austin down. Jericho's got the cover.
Welcome everybody to Review Away. It's John Pollock.
So funny.
I was going to introduce you, the man that the women love, Wei Ting.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I could be better.
Are you doing irresistible? To all the ladies out there, our female listeners.
Please stop.
They're sending in fan mail.
I don't know what you're talking about, but it sounds really creepy.
How's your week been?
It's been fine, but Monday was a bit weird. I might have had something bad. I might have had some bad curried. What do you call that?
Chicken? Curry chicken?
No, it's beef.
Curry
like,
beef.
No, but it's like the fuck. I don't even know what you call it. Brisket.
Oh.
Yeah, I might have had some bad curried beef brisket. So
you're still kind of showing the effects of it.
I'm not feeling good, man. I wasn't feeling great, but it might put our segment with Nate tomorrow in jeopardy.
Oh
is all
dear,
I'm saying.
Man. Yeah. Well, you're that sick. Well, I hope it's not like mad cow or something like that.
I hope not too. I don't think it's anything like that. I think I'd be dead if it was something like that. No, this was just like trips to the bathroom.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
How did you last during Raw? Were you aware that it was a 4-hour show with the Bret Hart Appreciation Night airing on the Score right afterwards?
I was aware. It didn't calculate in my mind that it would be 4 hours though. I enjoyed it. I don't mind it when it's a long show. When it's entertaining, and I really enjoyed the Bret Hart tribute.
Yeah. It was a nice tribute.
Were
you surprised, as I was, by some of the appearances?
Oh, man. Yeah, absolutely.
Some of which we met in Calgary.
Yeah. I didn't expect some of those guys to be there, especially after, incidents from the past.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of drama in that family. But
yeah.
And a nice moment, I guess. Do you foresee them doing more of these kind of things? I mean, kind of seems silly just to be doing all of this stuff just for the app, but that is a big push for them, and maybe we're going to see more of these appreciation nights and trying to keep people around.
It's not
past
just,
the 3-hour mark.
It's not just for the app, though. It's for the web. It's for their DVDs that they eventually put out. I mean, it's nothing new. I mean, they did it for Flair. They did it for Edge. They did it for basically anybody, like Jim Ross even. It's just a very good incentive for the live audience, and then a nice little bonus you could put.
Maybe we're going to get to the point where they're going to have like a live camera inside of the arena from like 2 p.m. on, so that you can log into the app 2 in the afternoon.
Ooh.
And just watch everything until 8 p.m. when Raw starts. Go to your TV, keep the app on.
Yeah. You mean like watch the ring as it gets set up and then watch?
You should mic somebody. Like, have Vince mic'd up. I might do that for a few weeks. Tune in at 2 p.m. and for the next 6 hours.
Yeah, but you got to make sure when he goes to the bathroom, he puts the mute on, because we've had that happen.
Oh, that's happened quite a few times.
It's happened to us in TV where, like, you know, we'd mic up a guest who's about to enter the studio, and then all of a sudden they need to take a bathroom break, and then in the whole control room, you know, everything. It was like they ate some curried beef.
Oh, Jesus. That's why Wei doesn't mic himself up. Nope. That's why Wei wants to be behind the camera, not in front of it.
That is right.
Well, we are going to be chatting about Raw from May the 21st of 2001 in beautiful San Jose, California.
Yeah.
This would have been when we were in grade number 11?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yep, yep.
Grade 11.
2001.
Yeah.
So grade 11.
The countdown to us meeting was underway. We were just...
I was just counting the days.
Yeah, just a few years away.
Yeah. We would have been what?
17.
17 at the time?
Yes, I thought of what WrestleMania was that year. That's how I remember my age for all these years.
Yeah, me too. We're both born in 1984, so yeah. Wow. It doesn't seem like that long ago. I still remember this match like it was yesterday.
Yeah, I found this Raw to be, first of all, very nostalgic. Like, I remember this period so well in wrestling. But watching it, like, this specific show, it was like... It was such an exciting time in wrestling because you'd kind of had this, like, you know, WrestleMania was so huge that year, and then there was a little come down, but then it was like the WCW invasion is coming. And I remember thinking, man, any kind of down period is going to completely be turned around with this WCW storyline. And I think every wrestling fan was just awaiting this storyline that they never ever imagined they would be able to see. And this show was really the introduction that we are about to launch this thing. And in that sense, this was a little depressing knowing what was in store for the next couple of months.
I wouldn't say this was really the launch, though. Like,
it was Shane coming out. This was his first appearance, I think, since WrestleMania. No, it wasn't. He was on, but this was him coming out saying WCW is coming soon. Okay. And that, at least to me, was, you know, this was the kickoff of, you know, a couple of weeks later, they would do that Nitro or the kind of the Buff Bagwell, Booker T,
right,
debacle.
I guess it might have been the week. But you're right. Absolutely right. Because this whole period for me, I remember really well because it was the ascension of Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho as top stars in the company. And following this, this match, this tag team match, everybody to this day probably still remembers very fondly, not just because of the great match, but because of the Triple H injury. But for me, like, this match kicked off a short little run that, you know, both Canadian Chris's had in the main event of Raw and SmackDown with some really, really great matches.
And this was ultimately, it was this push where it was the night after this. First of all, like, just to recap at the time here, they're coming off the Judgment Day pay-per-view the night prior where, I looked this up, Benoit does like 25 minutes with Kurt Angle, comes back later in the night to do the tag team turmoil match as a mystery partner for Jericho. They win that match. The next night, you do this big match. What does Chris Benoit get rewarded with on Tuesday night after three huge matches in 48 hours? You guys are going to do a TLC match on Tuesday night on free television.
Oh, that's right.
And that was the match where Benoit first really messed up his neck. It was like a diving headbutt to the floor through a table. Picture that.
Yeah.
And then he continued to work throughout the month, right up until that pay-per-view, and then was written off out of that, and then took the year off.
Yeah.
So it was this stretch that, that's insane, doing that kind of schedule in 3 days, and to just throw out a TLC match. I remember at the time it was, like, insane that they were choosing to do this, and it didn't even, like, pop a number on SmackDown.
Yeah, and why would they do that?
It was just to, like, a hot shot for SmackDown that week to do something big. And it wasn't announced. It's not like you had any idea that was coming out.
Yeah.
It was just Wednesday morning when people looked at the spoilers, they were like, yeah, they did a 25-minute TLC match on SmackDown.
Well, the thing was, it was an excellent match. And I don't know. I don't think we've ever reviewed it here. I don't think we've ever reviewed a SmackDown on a review away, have we?
An episode of SmackDown? Yeah. No, we haven't.
We might have. No, memorial, like no 9/11 episode, or anyway, whatever. But we've never done that match. But yeah, it was a time where the TLC brand was still really very much protected. You had, like,
I think this was only the third TLC one, and it's the one that guy
the fourth TLC. Four was, oh no, you're right.
Because
yeah,
one of them was like,
yeah, you're right, yeah.
The first three way they did wasn't an official TLC match.
Yeah.
But this is the one that Jericho joked in his book, it's the forgotten TLC match. Because, it was on TV, and thus, you know, people are going to kind of forget TV matches over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, you know, I think a lot of the guys after that match, they realized, you know, to do this kind of a match, it does legitimately do a lot of damage to these guys to mm-hmm. when the bar was so high at the time. And here Benoit was a perfect example of that, of someone who was like, it was a match that really kind of, I think, a mistake in hindsight just to do it. But you're right. This was really the kickoff of getting a lot of momentum behind new stars here in Benoit and Jericho. It was kind of, you know, Austin and Triple H had both men were kind of this heel unit on both programs at the time, feuding with The Undertaker and Kane, which just weren't the most inspiring baby faces at this point in time coming out of mm-hmm. WrestleMania. You turned Austin, and the logical choice was, well, you flip Hunter so that you've got a top baby face to replace The Rock, who is leaving, and instead they kept both heel. And it was just, to me at the time, you know, just as a fan, it was just The Undertaker and Kane to me just didn't, they weren't that kind of babyface that you were really excited to see a series of pay-per-view matches with.
No, they weren't. And not to mention the matches themselves would not have been of the quality that that you'd come to expect from a main event. And so I just remember even at the time as a fan, you know, of Benoit and Chris Jericho thinking that, just being so skeptical that they would go ahead with any type of real push for these guys, just because, you know, history has shown even up to that point that there wasn't too much faith in guys that were, you know, as their size. Also, you know, in the case of Chris Benoit, didn't have the level of charisma that a lot of people had on the top level. But that's what made this particular main event all the more exciting to me. It was the idea that even going, you know, into it, thinking that they were going to lose.
Yeah, I think most people expected that outcome. The announcers here at the time, this was during the period where Jerry Lawler was not with the company, so you had Jim Ross and Paul Heyman, which were always, I thought, a really fun combination together, and it was something refreshing after all those years of Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler, and it was...
such an improvement, especially at this point where, like, Jerry Lawler really just kind of became, puppies, Mr. Puppies, and when he came back, in my opinion, I thought he was even worse because he was no longer a heel even. He was just your Uncle Jerry.
Yeah, it's amazing that was 12 years ago.
Yeah,
that Lawler returned.
But meanwhile, like, Paul Heyman just played such a fantastic, you know, traditional heel commentator.
Yeah, and you got this bickering throughout between Ross and Heyman, but it never, during this show at least, it never to me really overshadowed anything.
The thing is, like, the two of them, like, and by the way, Jim Ross is, like, fantastic straight man, you know, to Paul Heyman's heel. Like, the two of them, as much as they would argue, it was all focused on benefiting what was happening. The storylines, the matches, everything. So, yeah, great team.
Yeah, I thought that the whole story of this show was, this is Benoit and Jericho's one chance to really break through. And they set up that main event so well. And, I mean, it was a phenomenal match. And the commentary was just great at really solidifying Benoit and Jericho as these guys to take seriously. And that was kind of, that was the dominant story throughout this show. This show was designed to make these two guys.
Yeah.
So it started off with Steve Austin coming out to start off the show after retaining the WWF title the night prior. He was also the tag team champion, of course, with Triple H. And he comes in, brags about still being champion, and says he's a fighting champion, the greatest champion in history. And he whipped The Undertaker's ass last night, and The Undertaker does not get a rematch. And says he doesn't deserve to be treated like trash, and he wants the people to stand up for him. And was getting quite a lot of heat here. I mean, the crowd was, you know, booing him quite a lot here.
What were your thoughts on this heel character up to this point?
I wasn't enjoying it too much. I mean, I think I reflected what a lot of people did. It was just such a gigantic shift for a character that was just so ingrained to people as this certain character, and now all of a sudden he's like this chicken shit heel who's running away from The Undertaker and to me, it was a really tough, like 180 for this character to go from the badass Steve Austin to now he's the cowardly Steve Austin. And I think I would have eliminated a lot of the more comedic stuff that Austin was very good at. But yeah. I think ultimately it was very detrimental because you didn't have that great foil to be the babyface he feuded with at the time, I felt.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree with you in hindsight. But at the time, I thought he was very entertaining, and I still think that he did a great job at, you know, setting out to do what a heel's supposed to do, being that cowardly person. But you're right, in hindsight, it's not what I don't think was best for the company.
He's then interrupted by Chris Jericho, who comes out, apparently sponsored by Team Punishment here, with this flame shirt.
Okay.
Remember when these were really big?
I remember his flame
just put
shirt.
Flames on everything.
I know. Flame shoes.
Flame shoes, yeah. Flame shirts, flame fighter shorts. They were all the rage in 2001.
Were they? I never had a pair.
Maybe not. Maybe they didn't catch on. Quite catch fire. He says he doesn't care why Austin turned at WrestleMania. He said, "You sold your mind, soul, and body to Vince McMahon. And you've become more of a slut than Stephanie." To which Jim Ross, with one of his great, great calls of all time, says,
"Jericho just called Stone Cold a slut."
Ouch.
Effective.
Yeah. Back when you couldn't.
Stone Cold slut, Austin.
Okay.
He wants the two-man power trip to become the two-time losers. And they have a match tonight against Benoit and Jericho, stemming from the tag team turmoil match they won the night before in order to get a title shot. And that would be our main event for later tonight. And then they fought inside of the ring. Triple H ran in, and then Benoit ran in to clear the ring with Benoit and Jericho left standing in the ring. So that was your setup for the main event later on in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
Austin and Hunter then in the back with Vince McMahon. And Austin's complaining about his interview time being interrupted, and Vince is just trying to calm down both men. And then Kurt Angle arrives. He had just won his gold medals back the night prior, defeating Chris Benoit in a 2 out of 3 falls match. And he goes up to the security, gets one of the guys' name wrong, and tells them, "God bless America." And there will be a big medal celebration later on in the show built around Kurt Angle. What a difference for this guy. I mean, it's almost like two different people from the current Kurt Angle to this Kurt Angle. I mean, it's just crazy just to picture the two together. I mean, this was a much higher pitched voice, a guy that was just, I don't know, looked a lot healthier back then.
Okay. I mean, much of that is because of the character change, not necessarily health, I'd say.
I mean, even his voice, though, it's like he's...
Yeah, well, the comedic Kurt Angle would probably talk in a higher voice than the serious and intimidating Kurt Angle.
I'm just saying the guy's gone through a lot of transformation in the last 12 years, I would say.
So. We all have.
I guess so.
I'd like to hear a tape of you from 12 years ago. See how high your voice was.
Maybe it would be pretty high.
How about a tape of Jaws? What about that? Was this back when you were doing Jaws? John's audio.
You know, the funny part is, it's in a box labeled SMC. So if you can find that box, maybe we can reveal the contents.
Okay. Someday.
We got a title match here. Rhino defending the hardcore title against the Big Show. Did you miss the hardcore title way after this match?
I really missed it.
Yeah.
I really missed it.
I miss matches like this. Yeah. These are awesome.
This was a classic.
Yep. Rhino, he struggles tossing a garbage can into the ring. Doesn't quite get over the top rope. Always one of those, moments from the crowd as they see that garbage can just balance on the top rope and fall back down. Anyway, Big Show clotheslines him on the floor, and they fight up the ramp where he gives a vertical suplex to Rhino. Note, this was Rhino with a Y in the name. They had to rename Rhino.
Thank you.
Spell it with a Y. Big Show runs and misses him, going into a post, and then hits him with a metal sign as Rhino attacks the right arm. And then there were more shots with this sign by Rhino, just over and over. And Heyman explains how he's attacking the arm so Big Show can't hit the choke slam. Seemed to make sense to me.
Absolutely.
And then more garbage lid shots to the head of Big Show, just over and over and over. And Rhino goes for the gore as Big Show pulls a chair up, and Rhino runs into the chair. And then Big Show kicks a garbage can into Rhino, and hits a choke slam onto the garbage can for the win.
Well, he didn't say how effective he was.
I guess not. I guess Rhino was just not breaking down that arm hard enough. No. And Big Show wins the hardcore title at 4:54. Just a title change out of nowhere.
To begin that classic Big Show hardcore title reign.
It was huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what can you say about these matches? It's just them hitting each other over the head with any type of object that they could acquire at the Home Depot. And Rhino was hitting really hard.
He was just blasting this man in the head.
Yeah, I will say, I mean, I don't think this title change, I don't remember it at all. I don't know what purpose it served other than maybe a, I don't know, some type of TV moment. Are you going to look up how long this title reign was?
I am. I want to see how long it...
All right, my guess, a week.
I'll say a month.
Say a month.
Okay. A month.
You look that up. I do feel, though, that...
First... Overall, there were 229 reigns shared amongst 52 wrestlers for the hardcore title.
Oh, let's look up this Big Show from 2001.
Okay,
reign.
May of 2000. Jesus Christ, I'm scrolling here just to get to this. Okay, it lasted 7 days.
Ah,
you were right.
Yeah, so that's how memorable it was. But I will say, you know, at the time, I thought they did a very good job of pushing Rhino as, you know, this monster despite his smaller, short stature. I mean, it's evident in the match here against the Big Show where he was way smaller than the Big Show, but he was a much more active and intense and energetic performer. And I think that goes a long way in making up for a smaller size. And they did a great job with Rhino, especially with Paul Heyman in commentary.
Yeah, I thought that Rhino was always a victim of a number of things. The first being just the influx of all the talent from WCW at the time, and he really got just buried in the mix there. He was just like random alliance guy number 8B. And then he suffered his neck injury that fall and would be out of action for a year. So he just had those things going against him. But when he first came in, he had those big spots in the TLC match at WrestleMania, and he came in with a lot of momentum. I mean, here's the final ECW champion, final TV champion. And you're right. I think Heyman really worked hard to get him over. And he had
to get that move over.
That gore, I mean, to this day, every time I see that, you think of Heyman's call in your ear. So, I mean, started off with momentum, but unfortunately it just faded away. Kurt Angle is then in the back talking to this elderly security guard, and Angle notes that this guy doesn't have much time left on this planet, and he will give him a lasting memory tonight with his medal ceremony. Say whatever you will about the comedy of Kurt Angle, he was great.
He was really excellent.
An entertaining character. Mm-hmm. Then the APA are in the back playing poker, and Terry walks through their makeshift set and asks why they aren't warming up, and they say they are. And then, one of the great botches of all time, Terry opened up a can of beer and totally missed her mouth.
Yeah.
And it went all over her chest.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
With this white shirt on. I mean, couldn't you do a retake way if you were so thirsty? Like, no. She totally missed her mouth.
She completely missed, yeah. It got her shirt all wet.
Yeah, and then she didn't even stop when she realized it. She tried to, like, move it towards her mouth, and then she hit the other breast.
I know. It was almost like she was doing it on purpose, but, I mean, nobody could be that stupid. I mean, think about the...
They even replayed it.
I know. Think about the dry cleaning bill she's going to have to, you know, put that shirt through.
Oh, imagine what it smelled like.
Beer stains.
Thankfully, they had a robe for her to take all her clothes off and wear this robe out to the ring.
Well, thank goodness. She could have caught a cold.
Yeah.
She
might have had to have gone out naked.
Nah, that's silly.
Austin is in the back. Gets booed very loudly just by the fact that this man is roaming in the back. And he's looking for Deborah, but cannot find her. And that was that.
I feel like, you know, a lot of the heat maybe Austin had at the time, maybe not necessarily, you know, because people hated him. Well, no, people did hate him, but people hated him because they weren't giving people the Austin that everybody wanted.
I don't feel, yeah, you're right. It's like you are denying us the character we want out of you.
That's why we hate you. Yeah.
Spike was with Molly, the two feuding families, the Dudleys and the Hollies, and she apologizes about her cousins costing the Dudleys the tag team turmoil match the night before, and Spike gives her a present, her own glasses to wear, and these two, This was like the Romeo and Juliet story, yeah. The two warring families. And I thought these two, I really enjoyed these two during this brief little run. They were cute together.
They were a cute, awkward couple and playing teenagers.
Yeah. I always enjoyed Molly Holly from her time in WCW where she was Miss Madness.
Really? What did she do in that?
She just hung out in a Randy Savage's corner.
What was there to like?
She wrestled a little bit.
She stood there.
Yeah, well.
You're a big fan of that?
She was attractive and a good wrestler, too.
Yeah, I was a fan of hers as well. Yeah. Good.
Then we got the APA against Perry Saturn and Dean Malenko. And the APA attacks them on the ramp, and Saturn takes a clothesline to the floor. Ross is just, did you notice this? He was making a big push for all the house shows coming up this weekend and the house shows they were coming off of. A big emphasis. We're going to be in Vancouver on Saturday.
No.
Yeah. Saturn and Malenko, they had Bradshaw in their corner and had the heat until Saturn was caught by Bradshaw, who then held on to Saturn, gave a big boot to Malenko, and Saturn came back with an overhead belly-to-belly suplex to Farouk. Bradshaw got the advantage as Terry got onto the apron in her robe, opened up the robe, but Bradshaw just ignored her and kept wrestling.
Completely no-sold the chest exposing.
No. I guess he was...
He's seen enough.
He was at work.
Yeah.
He was busy.
He's immune to sex.
I guess so. Farouk hit a spinebuster to Saturn. Then they gave him a super power bomb, and they played up that Saturn had his bell rung, and that they hit him right in the head. Then another super power bomb, and they pinned Saturn at 5 minutes and 35 seconds. So a show involving Triple H injured and questionable future at the end of the show and a concussion storyline. Way, how far have we really come in 12 years?
No, I don't know. I don't know how to answer that.
Yeah. This was enjoyable to see, the WWF's take on concussions, as this is the great setup for a new comedic character in 2001 versus 2013, where it's going to be a main event angle involving Triple H and him being pried away from the sport.
You don't think Triple H is going to carry a mop, from now on?
Yeah. You're welcome.
Yeah. He's a sledgehammer with a face on it.
Yes. William Regal is with an assistant in the back discussing the UK people. And Austin walks in asking where Deborah is. And Regal says he doesn't know, but The Undertaker is here. Maybe he abducted her. And Austin is concerned.
Uh-oh.
Then Kurt Angle is in the back with Edge and Christian. Says that his medal ceremony is going to reek of awesomeness, and he asks Edge and Christian if they want to be on the silver and bronze medal podiums to stand next to him. And they turn down this offer, and Angle says, oh, I understand, because if I'm there by myself, the spotlight will just be on me. Great idea, guys. Another great chemistry was these three.
Yeah. All three of them were elevated.
They really were. Then we had Matt Hardy against X-Pac for the European title, where Matt Hardy came out with Lita and Jeff Hardy, and then the grand return way.
Yes.
Yo, you dealing with the X Factor.
I got everything I ever wanted, and I'll never give that back. Yo. Oh, I know you hate that X-Factor, but you ain't gotta look at me like that. I said you ain't gotta
X Factor.
Yeah.
Oh. Music to my ears.
I got everything I ever wanted.
Uncle Cracker.
I love that song.
Is that not a bit of an offensive term?
Uncle Cracker? Well, he chose to call himself that.
I guess so.
It's like rappers saying the N-word.
Yeah, but is there any rapper that calls himself the N-word? Like, that's his
probably.
Title?
Probably.
See, you and I won't even say it because it would be offensive.
So, I'm sorry, I won't say this artist's name anymore. Uncle...
I could say it, though.
You could say
it. And I allow you to say it.
Oh, thanks.
It's okay. Me and my folks here, we're okay with this term. I've explained.
You've asked all of them? You've asked every white person?
I did an informal survey, yeah.
Thank you. All right.
So Uncle Cracker brings them to the ring.
Yeah.
One of the few guys that's still around on the roster, Albert.
That's right.
Tensai.
Yeah. I mean, the very idea of this group is kind of baffling because even at the time, I mean, X-Pac... he was out of DX and was just kind of floating there. And so
this was
like,
after, this was before the NWO. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they're just like, oh, why don't we give this guy a group? X-Pac a group? Like, I mean, people don't even like him. Yeah. You're going to give him a faction? You're going to drag all these two guys under him, along with him? And you're going to give him the worst song that's ever been written in the history of music?
I enjoyed the song. Yeah. I thought it fit these three great.
Oh, it absolutely did, because they all sucked. That's why.
Whatever happened to Uncle Cracker?
I don't know.
Did he go on to any success?
Yeah, he had that hit.
Yeah, he had a hit of
I don't
Follow
know.
Me.
Yeah, I don't know what else he's doing.
Yeah. Well, this would have been a highlight for him. It was
I guess the
X Factor run.
Yeah.
So, European Championship here. Another title I ask, Wade, do you miss it? When Europe was accurately represented within the WWE.
I miss it every night. I think about it all the time.
Who screams European than Matt Hardy? What was it even designed to be? Like, what? Like,
dude,
the Intercontinental title, that means, you know, all the continents here coming together to have a representative. But, like, the European nation, was the European Union really feeling underappreciated in the WWE?
Well, I feel like we've had this discussion before, okay? I mean, well, first of all, what is the difference between intercontinental and world?
Well,
we
did have
that aren't continents.
Well, I mean, we did discuss this in the fact that the world champion is also representing what is 70% of the world, and that is the bodies of water, which the continents do not represent nor have ownership
of. So I guess the world champion is sort of the champion of Atlantis. And all the other underwater communities that we don't even know about.
Oceania,
right.
Who lays claim to that? I would have to say that... I would say in that case, would Dolph Ziggler be more encompassing than the WWE champion? The WWE classifies itself as a universe, but they are their self-contained universe, whereas world...
I mean, in my opinion, I would think that the world would be a bigger, because WWE, you're just the champion of a corporation.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, you're champion of a number of employees, but if you're the world champion. Anyway, Intercontinental, okay. European champion, I guess they toured a bit in Europe at the time, and I don't know. That was it. I mean,
This guy, Matt Hardy, this guy represents us.
You know, as opposed to what? The Asia Championship or the African Championship?
Why wasn't there an Asian Championship?
You have no Asians on the roster.
Well, like, that Tajiri? Didn't stop Matt Hardy from being... Matt Hardy could be the Asian champion.
He's the descendant of Europeans.
Tensai!
No.
He's your crossover.
Yeah, but I mean, at least you had more descendants. Basically, it should be the white championship.
I mean, it's not like they had an overabundance of Europeans on the roster here. You had William Regal?
No, I'm saying you had descendants of Europe.
Oh, well... I just think if you want to, it just seemed like such a random championship.
Oh, it really is. Well, the thing is, if you wanted a third title in there underneath the Intercontinental, what would you call it? What would be a fair term?
The hardcore title. It was already there.
No. I mean, you already had the U.S. title in WCW. Well, what else would you have? A North American title?
The Canadian championship. Wouldn't that make sense? There were a lot of Canadians here on the roster.
So what, only Canadian? I mean, Canada, you're... I love my country. But I mean,
we don't deserve representation.
No, absolutely not. Because if you're the champion of Canada, what are you champion of? 10 million people, or what is it? 11 million? That's not exciting at all.
We had the Saskatchewan Hardcore Invitational title in WCW.
That was cool. That worked out.
The shit strap.
Oh, yes.
So clever. But was that Vince Russo?
Yeah.
So Matt Hardy and X-Pac were fighting for ownership of Europe. There's a big clothesline for a two count by Hardy. X-Pac then missed a spin kick and then ate a clothesline. They had a big chance here for Lita. And Justin Credible then trips Matt Hardy. And Heyman called him the one-man crime spree, as his friends like to call him. The one-man crime spree.
His friends call him that?
Yeah. Hey, one-man crime spree in the house. What up? Hey, where's my wallet?
Man.
Justin Credible.
Yeah, he's the jerk who stole my... beer in my fridge.
The crime spree. Nicknames that didn't take off. Credible and X-Pac, they run Hardy into the post, balls first, and then Albert tosses him back into the ring, but Hardy kicks out at two. X-Pac hits the Bronco Buster. Then Hardy makes his comeback, runs X-Pac into the turnbuckle head first, and then a leg drop off the second turnbuckle for a two count. X-Pac counters a twist of fate with a backslide using the ropes for a two. Hardy goes to the floor, and then Jeff attacks the one-man crime spree, while Albert then runs Jeff into the steel post. Lita gets on X-Pac's back. It's flipped over. And then Eddie Guerrero runs down wearing a Hardy Boys t-shirt, attacks X-Pac, and throws him back into the ring where he takes a twist of fate, and Matt Hardy gets the win at 551 with the storyline that Eddie is this heel who is now all of a sudden helping the Hardys and doing this kind of do we trust him or not, which really wouldn't play out because shortly afterwards, Eddie would show up in no condition to perform, was sent home, and then he'd be released a couple of months later. Right. So this really didn't go anywhere.
See, I was wondering why, because like once I saw Eddie run out, I was like, what the hell is this? What does he have to do with anything? And then I in the back of my mind, I just don't remember thinking about any type of resolution here. But this was after the China angle, right?
This was, in fact, the Judgment Day pay-per-view. That was China's last match ever with the WWE.
I see. There you go.
And no reference to her on this show.
Yep. So, Eddie's out here, and it really feels like, you know, amongst the radicals that had arrived, they were obviously very much behind Benoit, and to a smaller extent, but still, this, you know, a lot of potential seen in Eddie Guerrero. And then all of a sudden, like, the radicals just kind of, you know, they weren't really a thing anymore. The Radicals became Perry Saturn and Dean Malenko.
Yeah. So, again, this was kind of similar to an angle they do a few years later when Eddie passed away, where he was kind of befriending Batista, and it was always this tease. Was he going to turn on him, or was he actually working with him? And it was...
Because he can play that character really well.
Yeah.
You know, he's got that... Like, I mean, you look at him, and like he looks like a guy that is just up to no good, but he could play, like, you know, I'm your friend really well.
Yeah, it was that whole stuff with China where you really got to see that aspect of his character, and it was it was a shame he was going through all these problems at the time, because this was when he was really clicking as not just in-ring performer, but as a character. And it was just, you know, you had this hot period here, and unfortunately, just 2001 was pretty much a write-off for him.
That's always been what stood out about Eddie Guerrero to me, as, apart from the other four that the other three that had arrived, and was just his ability to not just go in the ring, but to be able to you know, have so much charisma.
Mm-hmm. Saturn is in the back being looked over by officials, and they're putting a flashlight in his eyes. Terry and Malenko are all concerned, and he just says, "You're welcome." And this would be the start of his crazy character, where he would introduce Moppy. Mm-hmm. And he had like this blonde dyed mustache at the time.
Yeah. Moppy was his, like,
Pepe.
No, or I was thinking of Wilson from Castaway.
Sure.
Because, like, he had the same face as Wilson.
Right.
In Castaway, which was a big movie at the time. But I'm just trying to think, you know, like, watching this, how did this gimmick come to be? You know, like, somebody must have, like, they're thinking about ideas for what do we do with Perry Saturn. And then, like, somebody must have just thought, hey, this guy, he looks like somebody who would be mentally challenged. Let's give him that gimmick. And that's probably it.
Well, and it's odd that his gimmick here was that he suffered this concussion where he couldn't remember stuff, because when I interviewed him
he became mentally handicapped. Like, not just remembered, he started to talk like a child.
But when I interviewed him last year and I asked him about his WWE stuff, he's like, I go back and watch that, I don't remember anything.
Wow.
Anything from my time in the WWE. He was like, I was just that messed up on stuff at the time.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Well, maybe that's a new level of the character. Perhaps he wasn't actually concussed. It was just, he's just really high.
Kurt Angle comes out for his medal ceremony. Jim Ross refers to him as kind of nerdy. And Heyman says that he is the coolest dude ever. And Angle comes in, and he starts reading from a piece of paper about defining what a hero is, and says he had his medals stolen and were rubbed against another man's genitalia. But he won them back at Judgment Day in what was awe-inspiring, and they had this massive pyro display for him with confetti coming down from the ceiling. And Paul Heyman here takes a dig at Jim Ross, saying if John Wayne were alive, he would be wishing he was half the man that Kurt Angle is. And that, of course, Jim Ross has always said one of his heroes was John Wayne. Paul Heyman taking his shot here at him. And then, who should interrupt the medal ceremony but Shane McMahon, to everyone's favorite theme song. And he comes out just dancing.
Yeah, I never understood that.
In brackets, I have dancing even worse today.
Yeah, it's so bad.
And like, then proceeded to cut what I have to think is one of the shittiest promos that had no endpoint to it. He talks about how Angle has three eyes, but I have three letters that I live by. WCW, which was resoundly booed by the audience. This,
I wouldn't say they were booed.
There were, okay, maybe not deafening, but there were boos.
The boos didn't really happen yet. They would happen a bit later, though.
Well, he then goes to define what WCW stands for one by one, with W standing for world. But we are in a world with numerous planets, including ones like Pluto. It's like, what the fuck? Then he says, the C stands for championship, which you do not have, Kurt. And other words that start with C include crayon, coyote, and cookie.
He was doing a Cookie Monster joke.
What?
He said, like, at the end, he said, it also stands for cookie, which is good enough for me.
Oh.
Isn't that what, like, Cookie Monster?
Okay. Cookie Monster. And the last letter was W for wrestling, and they all... Fuck. Other words that start with W include water, whatever, and wussy. And I think Kurt was just watching this train wreck of a promo and ended the segment with Shane on the top podium, and Angle just ran up, and Angle slammed him off the metal stand, applied the ankle lock. Horrendous segment. This was so fucking terrible.
Yeah.
And this was like, WCW was designed to be like the babyface organization at the start. And this was like, part of our kickoff was just this shitty, shitty, shitty promo.
Yeah, it sucked.
How could you not be cheering for Kurt Angle by the end of this?
Yeah, yeah, you're right. But I think Shane's job was to basically go out there and goad Kurt Angle into delivering this Angle Slam for him. And this
great,
was,
cut this, a promo on him.
This is his promo. This was his idea of a promo.
This is one of the worst promos I've ever heard.
It was bad. Yeah,
there was no like, who comes up with this, and what is the logic? Be like, it wasn't even insulting. It was like, up until wussy, that was our big punchline, was calling him a wussy.
Yeah, yeah.
Crayons, Pluto, planets, like, what the fuck?
I will say, though, I felt it was made somewhat salvageable because of that awesome Angle Slam off the podium onto the confetti.
Yeah.
The confetti
looked great.
Made it look great. It's just like this man bouncing off of confetti and then the confetti flying everywhere. That was cool.
So this was the start of their feud, which would lead up to what some fans believe is the greatest pro wrestling match in the history of pro wrestling, Kurt Angle and Shane McMahon at the King of the Ring.
It was a really good match.
Yeah. Which we have reviewed. You can go to our archives.
Not the greatest match, but yeah, it was a really good
match.
It was
a spectacle.
Yeah.
Legit glass.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was the segment. Just bizarre. Deborah's in the office, and all this time where she had gone missing, she just went to go get coffee. She went to go get coffee for an hour, and it was all the way at the other side of the building, which I can sympathize with. If you want some coffee, you got to get some coffee. And Austin explains that he was worried she was abducted. And the Undertaker then just runs into the room, right into Deborah's face, and scares her.
Says, hey, woman, you scared? Like, this was perhaps the lowest budget sneak attack in the history of sneak attacks. Like, I don't even think he came into the room. He was just, like, hiding in the corner.
This was like the mythical Undertaker running in with his bandana.
Yeah. But, like, I think he just, like, hit off frame and then jumped in. And then, like, maybe he was hiding behind a plant or something.
Well, he scares Deborah, stares at Austin, saying, it's personal now. And if you bring my family into it... Pretty much alludes to, like, he'll kill Deborah or something.
Yeah.
It's like, I'll show you what stepping on someone's family means. So, very, very creepy here from The Undertaker.
And he's the good guy.
He's the good guy, yeah. He's the babyface in all this. And Undertaker walks away, and Austin then stands there with Deborah saying, I was gonna whip his ass, but I didn't because you were here. And I didn't want things to get violent with you around. He's so lucky right now.
Hmm.
So I thought Austin was great, but
he
it just
played, Yeah.
I just don't think people wanted to see this guy just cowering to all these people.
Sure. But he did play a great abusive husband.
Shane McMahon is then escorted out of the building, which would play into an angle later on in the show. And then we got the Dudley Boys against Hardcore and Crash Holly, the two fighting families, with Spike and Molly in opposite corners. There's a chant of "We want tables." D-Von starts yelling at Spike for speaking to Molly at ringside, and Hardcore Holly hits a big dropkick to D-Von. Crash comes in with a DDT for a two count. Then Crash, he climbs onto the shoulders of Bubba, and Bubba just walks to the corner, and Crash takes a doomsday device from D-Von. The Dudleys hit the "was up" spot to Hardcore.
Back when "was up" was actually a popular thing.
Even then, we were at the tail end of it, but these guys, they milked that spot for as long as they could.
Oh, they milked it for like a decade.
Yeah.
Like, long after Budweiser stopped.
Bubba calls for the tables, and Jim Ross asks, why is it always D-Von that's got to go get the tables? Couldn't Bubba get them once in a while? And this would actually be
a feud.
This would be this. Yeah. They'd base this on the feud. Why was D-Von always being made into Bubba's the help?
Table man.
Yeah. Molly tries to stop D-Von. Then Spike steps in, and Crash drop kicks a table into D-Von and Spike. Crash grabs the ring bell, and Molly takes the ring bell away on the apron. So Hardcore then grabs the ring bell, hits Bubba with it, and pins Bubba at 5:33. And both sides are upset here about Molly getting involved.
I like this booking. I kind of like the storyline. It was clever in the, you know, the way they made Molly try to stop it but actually help instead. I thought it was cool.
Vince is with Kurt in the back, apologizes for Shane interrupting his medal ceremony, but he has had him thrown out of the building as a result. And Kurt says, well, I'm sorry. I hope you didn't mind me putting him in the ankle lock. And Vince says, well, I am upset. Why didn't you break his ankle? And he makes a match for later in the night with Kurt Angle challenging Kane for the Intercontinental title. Mm-hmm. Then the Dudleys, there was Spike Dudley, and they're pissed over Molly, tells them not to trust the Hollies. And Bubba says, you know what's going to happen now, Spike. And Spike is all concerned as Bubba says, that bitch is going through a table.
Not subtle at all.
That's how they dealt with women that crossed them back in the day. Mm-hmm. Very different company. They were not trying to be stars.
That's
at this
how
time.
They got over, was by putting women through the table.
Yep. Yeah. The Hardys are with Lita in the locker room with Matt Hardy coming off of his match, and Eddie comes in. And they see that Matt Hardy is roughed up and says, I'll step in to team up with Jeff. So here, poor Matt here, double booked on this show. Can't give this guy a break. So Lita and Jeff say, yeah, that's a good idea, Matt. And it's going to be Jeff Hardy and Eddie Guerrero teaming up later on as they reluctantly trust Guerrero. Jericho and Benoit are shown in the back and ready for their match. And Ross and Heyman really hype up the main event and the fact that this could be the start of a new era within the company, so pushing it really, really hard. And they have Austin and Hunter in the back. Hunter says to remember that they are a team and says that he blames Austin for the fact he lost the Intercontinental title, and he is the reason that Austin is still WWE champion after the pay-per-view. And Austin says he doesn't deserve to be talked to like that, and Hunter just walks off saying, we'll prove it. So it was like they were, at the very least, you know, teasing a Hunter turn at some point, but it was like Hunter was getting booked as like the badass here, and Austin was kind of second in command here to Hunter in this team. Mm-hmm. So it was just a very weird, I didn't enjoy these two together as heels. To me, it was just, I don't know, didn't work for me. And it wasn't like I was craving this Hunter babyface turn either.
The problem was there was no babyface opposition to equal them.
No. And I think the long-term plan was eventually turn Hunter to be that role, but they weren't at that part yet, and it's interesting. Had the injury not happened, what they would have done at that point.
Yeah.
Stevie Richards is at WWF New York and says he has a big announcement, but then just gets cut off by Paul Heyman saying, shut up, no one cares. And they just cut away from him.
Did he end up announcing anything?
Not that I know of. I don't know.
What could it have been?
Like,
what
maybe that he was
disbanding?
He's like, I'm going to last in this company longer than 80% of employees that have worked in this company.
Did he?
He was there a long time. Huh. Came in like 99, and he was there for a long time, like 2005, 2006.
Wow.
A good little run there in the company. Yeah. Just kind of one of those guys that, yeah, he's still there.
Yeah, he had a great run on Sunday Night Heat.
Yeah, well, that was Stevie Ray Heat.
Yeah.
This was he had a gimmick. We had Guerrero and Hardy with Lita taking on Edge and Christian. And Guerrero and Hardy work over Edge. Christian pulls Jeff off the apron and sends him into the barricade. Edge and Christian got the advantage on Jeff in their corner and stomp away at him. Guerrero hit this great-looking tilt-a-whirl head scissors to Edge, and then they double-teamed Christian and even did a poetry in motion spot with Hardy going off the back of Guerrero. Eddie got speared by Edge, and then Lita crotches Edge on the steel post. Should be a play on words for a couple of years down the road. And thus allowed Eddie to hit a sunset flip off the top to Christian and pinned him at 417. So the people were into this Eddie Guerrero Hardy's alliance at this point. But again, wouldn't last too long. But you can just see, I mean, they just had so much talent at this point. It was amazing. And then
Who are you talking about?
Oh, I mean, just
all of them
here in the undercard. I mean, yeah, you had the Hardys, you had Edge and Christian on the way up.
Yeah.
I mean, totally. They were just loaded with talent, and you had more talent about to come in. So this was really a peak period for them in terms of the roster. Then we went to Kane and Kurt Angle for the Intercontinental title, and Kane was selling his left arm throughout this, coming off the chain match with Hunter from the night before. So Kurt was working over the arm throughout the match, and that was kind of the story they told here. Did you enjoy where Kurt transitioned into an armbar and Kane was trying to clasp his hands, and Heyman said that this is bad either way for Kane, because if he lets go of his hands and relieves the pressure of the armbar, he will be pinned. I question if Heyman's ever been in an armbar, because if he were to let go of the hands, the armbar would be applied and pinned.
Uh-huh.
He was trying to say that that would relieve the pressure when that would actually accentuate the pressure.
No. Yeah, you don't want to do that.
No, not at all.
Maybe he was going to go for his hitchhiker's escape.
I just, armbar spots kill me in wrestling.
These days, yeah. I mean, at the time, 2001, I mean, who did anybody know the difference? But yeah, these days, you got to make them look realistic because people know what an armbar looks like.
Kane gets out as Angle wraps his arm around the post and smashes it repeatedly until Kane knocks Angle into the post. Angle continues working on the arm back in the ring. Kane comes back with a side slam, a top rope clothesline, and then goes for the choke slam, but Angle kicks the arm and then runs into a big boot by Kane. And then Angle takes a clothesline to the floor, and who should come back but Shane McMahon, who mysteriously got back into the building, alluding to someone allowing him into the building.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So.
Who could it be?
Well, that's what.
Aces and Eights?
Maybe. Maybe.
Shit.
Wow. Aces and Shane.
D'Lo was there at the time, wasn't he?
Oh, that's true. Yeah. The Eternal Mole. And he attacks Angle, tosses him into the ring, and Kane hits a choke slam for the win at 5:53. I thought this was a good match. These two would tend to have some good chemistry. They had some really good TV matches.
Yeah.
And then ended up getting WrestleMania together a year later. But working over the arm here, I like this match.
It was okay. I remember like they had a really good match later on in the year.
Yeah, it was a SmackDown, a really good match. I think that was the reason they ended up doing it at WrestleMania based on that match.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the best match of Kane's career.
Yep.
I wouldn't go so far as to think that's crazy.
No, not at all.
We got this segment in the back with Benoit and Jericho, and it was just so rah, rah, rah. It's like, it was Benoit doing all the talking, which seemed backwards, but he says how, tonight when we go out there, let's remember when we were in the dungeon with Stu, which... Jericho was never actually in the dungeon with Stu, but let's...
Oh, it makes for a good story.
It sounds better.
They were there together. So, they were best friends growing up.
Let's remember our time in Japan. You play Jericho here, okay?
Okay.
Let's remember our time in the dungeon.
Yeah.
Let's remember our time in Japan.
Yeah.
In Mexico.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
Europe.
Yeah, was I there? Yeah, I remember.
It was only yeah. That's all he said was yeah. Yeah. The crap we dealt with down south. And it all boils down to tonight. And Jericho says, yeah, tonight is all about us. And it was just like, it was so like 80s baby faces. Like it was
it was like backstage video game vignette.
It was. Yeah. It really was. And another thing here was that this was why it was so confusing at the time with how they were trying to position WCW, because I don't think that they had...
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Like, you have these two up-and-coming stars who positioned like WCW as this negative force that kept them down.
I know.
And yet we're going to introduce WCW as baby faces, as this invading group.
Well, the thing they're thinking was that the old WCW was bad, but now that WCW is under new management, under Shane McMahon, now they're going to be amazing.
It was just literally like...
Well, I mean, throughout the years, they've educated their audience to think that WCW is shit.
Yeah,
it's
just...
not going to change.
Like, you can just look at, like, WCW and ECW. It just had different connotations with the audience.
Yeah, absolutely.
One was accepted and one was rejected. Yeah. And, I mean, we could talk for hours about the WCW storyline.
But that had little to do with even the way the WWE portrayed them. I mean, that's just...
No, but it was a handicap, I think, the way they were bringing it in and had such huge plans for it. So, by the way, if for those of you that read the Wrestling Observer newsletter, last week's issue had this great story on... the 2001 purchase of WCW and ECW and all the plans they had for the WCW relaunch. Some really interesting stuff of just what they were planning. Like at one point earmarking, like Nitro would get the Spike TV or the TNN slot on Monday nights. They were going to make that WCW show and WWF would be on SmackDown exclusively. And that would be the precursor to the brand extension. But you had the combination of the Tacoma Dome Raw, where it was just, or the Tacoma Washington Raw, and TNN. They were like, "No, we paid for WWF. We don't want WCW on the Monday night slot." So,
how would that have worked out? Nitro, like, imagine no Raw, but just Nitro.
I know it would have been. I think
that would have been a big mistake
if you weren't willing to bring in the big names that were associated with that brand. I just think it was going to be tough.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you could have done as bad as things turned out, but they certainly had a lot of problems going into that.
Right.
Anyway, we get set for the main event, and our sponsor, Way, Combos. Really fast food.
They're so fast and so good for you, too.
Yeah, you're a big fan.
Fucking love Combos.
I couldn't believe they sold these things until you pointed them out a year or so ago.
What, today?
Combos,
yeah, no. You can still buy them in the store. I mean, the thing is, like, anytime I go to a store and find Combos, they're, like, covered in dust.
Ew.
Like, nobody touches these things.
Except you.
I did once, yeah.
Ew.
And, I mean, I'm stupid with my
covered in dust.
Yeah.
Austin and Triple H against Benoit and Jericho for the tag titles. A very famous match, mainly a famous spot that has been replayed over and over and over again, usually to the sounds of U2.
Yep.
Match starts off with Austin and Jericho. They double team Hunter in their corner. Big chop exchange between Austin and Benoit, with Benoit hitting a superplex to Austin and Hunter breaking up the pin. They had a lot of time here by Raw standards at the time. Match went about 14 minutes. Benoit applied the crossface. This was, to me, where the crowd just really got into it. Benoit had the crossface on Austin, and you're expecting Hunter to break it up. But then all of a sudden, Jericho does his dropkick off the second rope, knocking Hunter to the floor. And it was that moment where the crowd believes, wow, maybe he'll tap out here. And the crowd was just so great in this match. Just so hot here for Benoit and Jericho. Hunter throws Benoit into the steps after the crossface was broken. They attack Benoit and got the heat here for a prolonged period of time. Benoit got a few hope spots, getting out of an abdominal stretch to hit a German suplex, hits an enziguri, and then he makes the hot tag to Jericho, but then the ref didn't see it. And prolonging the tag, they continue to attack Benoit on the floor. He gets back in, and Hunter hits a pedigree, but the ref is with Jericho and Austin on the floor, and Hunter gets up, and Jericho hits him with a missile dropkick. Benoit finally makes the tag, and Jericho comes in with Austin. He clotheslines Hunter to the floor. Then Jericho blocks the Thez press, applying the Walls of Jericho to Austin, and this is where Hunter comes back into the ring with the famous spot where he breaks the walls and tears his quad, but hobbles to continue with the match, goes over to the announce desk.
And you just, like, watch that. And
you would never think that it was...
Well, you see Hunter limping, but, like, at no point was there any type of real hesitation, like, oh, shit, do I continue with this match or not? It was just like, fuck, this happened, I'm hurting a lot, but I still got to go to this table and take the Walls of Jericho anyway.
Yeah, like, walls, like... He communicates to Jericho that he's hurt, but still goes through with this spot on the table.
It really is amazing.
It's amazing to watch this.
Yeah.
So he's got the Walls of Jericho applied to Hunter on the table. Meanwhile, Benoit and Austin are back in the ring where Benoit hits a top rope headbutt, goes for the cover, but Benoit then takes a stunner after Austin recovers, and you get the false finish here where the ref goes to count, but then Jericho pulls the referee out before the count of three.
This was my favorite moment of the match. It was this.
Everyone was buying this was the finish.
This false finish because of the layering of false finishes on top, up to this point, so that, by the time that this happened, you're like, okay, this has to be it. But then also because Jericho is completely out of frame when he's pulling Earl Hebner out. So the way it looks on camera, it just looked like, all right, one, two, and then Earl Hebner gets sucked into some type of vortex off screen to delay that finish. So
I hate that spot now, but at this time, I mean, it was right around 2000 they introduced that spot, and WWE was certainly guilty of overdoing it, but yeah. You're right. This was great.
Yeah, the timing of it was awesome.
The key was always the timing.
And also the camera work, too, and pro wrestling has always been an art about presentation, and so much of the camera work really figures into how well the match is perceived, in my opinion, and for spots like these.
So the referee is pulled out. Jericho comes in, goes for a lion salt, but Austin gets his knees up. He gets up. Jericho blocks the stunner, hits the lion salt, but now Hunter's got the sledgehammer, gets into the ring with the sledgehammer, and goes to hit Jericho, who moves out of the way, and he hits Austin with the sledgehammer, and then Benoit tackles Hunter to the floor.
And crowd explodes.
Oh, they are just going insane. Yeah. And then Jericho climbs onto Austin and gets the pin. The crowd was so awesome here, and Jericho and Benoit win the tag titles at 14:05. Certainly this match is remembered for the quad spot, but this is honestly, take that out of things.
Yeah.
One of the best matches in Raw history.
I remember not even knowing about the quad tear until the day after, but just coming off of this Raw thinking, holy shit, that was one of the best. Definitely.
I don't think anyone realized at the time that Hunter was that hurt and that he was just selling, because he continued here with a number of spots it was incredible to that degree.
But I was just remember just even 12 years ago thinking, wow, that was just a fantastic, fantastic wrestling match. And to this day, perhaps, maybe my favorite TV match of all time. Jim Ross and Paul Heyman, as we mentioned earlier, were just fantastic, excellent. And, taking a context to the idea that, okay, here are Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho, two guys who have traditionally not really been given the ball. Now you had them actually go over the two biggest stars in the whole company at the time, winning these tag team titles. It was certainly a big moment, for quote-unquote internet wrestling fans, but even just fans of good wrestling at the time. It was really great.
Yeah. Now, if there was a disappointment to this, it was that when the rating came in the next day, it was a 4.2, which it sounds good, but it was the lowest number of the year. And, it was really weird because it was such a hot Raw to go off with, and I think combined with the TLC match, they felt this was a great hot shot, and again, Benoit and Jericho winning that they were just putting them over so strong, and the first week it didn't really click with the numbers, but nonetheless, they went with Austin, Benoit, Jericho at the next pay-per-view, and it was 2 weeks out, they just stopped really pushing them, and it was just this really, it was the strangest build to a pay-per-view, because first of all, you had the two baby faces going after the one heel, which was a weird dynamic rather than picking one or the other, and it was just it was they gave up on these two after 2 weeks.
But when were the series of Benoit Austin matches that took place?
It was the week after this. It was they did one in Calgary and one in Edmonton, and Edmonton is the very well remembered
one. The
10
Germans.
Yeah, it was the Raw. They did the screw job with Stu and everyone in the front row, and Bruce peeking into the shot. You remember that?
Yeah, vaguely. Yes.
Yeah, that was the week after. So, a super hot match and stuff. And it was unfortunate. You had so many X factors here with the combination of,
Uncle Cracker.
Exactly. You had, I think, the rating somewhat, kind of cooled them off. And Benoit got hurt. And they kind of had this idea. They knew he was going for neck surgery. But I'm curious what you think. Had the Hunter injury not taken place here, what do you think you would have followed this up with? If Benoit was healthy and Hunter was healthy, where you would have gone with this? Because it seemed that they were really teasing Austin and Hunter here with the friction backstage, and then Hunter nailing him with the sledgehammer here at the end of the match.
Yeah.
It seemed that was the direction they were going with.
I don't know. That's a good question. Not one that I even want to try to answer, because I'm no good at that. But I think you also have to keep in mind that the invasion was just looming, and how would these four people, had they all stayed healthy, figured into the invasion?
I remember there being, you know, a million ideas were thrown out, but one of them was making Hunter one of the main guys for WCW at the time.
Man, even that, I hate it. Even that sounds so bad to me. Just, what, as Terror Horizon?
Those were clearly his glory days for WCW.
Yeah, everybody associates him with WCW.
Yeah. Well, there you go, everyone. That was a look back at a Raw that was a fun show to go back and watch, and just especially that main event, which, as I mentioned, one of the best Raw matches, I think, in history, but one that will likely not be on any compilation DVD or anything like that. We go on over to the feedback now, a handful of you checking this show out, and we'll start off with Christian Small. This show was a breeze to sit through. The combination of JR and Heyman on commentary, an extremely hot crowd all night, and the fact there wasn't anything terrible in terms of in-ring action added to that. The few highlights for me were the Terry Runnels beer segment, which we wouldn't get today, but it might help get some of the divas an actual reaction, and this led to a tattooed superstar Billy Graham attacking. Oh, sorry, that was Perry Saturn. On a personal level, I love the confetti flying down and the super angle slam into it. It's a visual that still sticks with me today. It's amazing to see four tag matches on one show, especially when you think WWE struggles to do one on most shows these days. And of course, the main event was the overall standout. That match was my personal favorite Raw match ever, and it's not hard to see why. Everything flowed well, which led to the already hot crowd just getting hotter and hotter. Shame this match can't get the love it deserves from WWE because Benoit was in it. I give this show 7 beer baths out of 10.
It's not really a shame. I mean,
it's like those that you want to go check it out, you can still go back and watch the match. It's
We go to Andrew Sheehy, who says, great choice this week. I remember watching this as an 11-year-old on Victoria Day, and I was impressed with it. The hardcore title match between Rhino and the Big Show was a good brawl, with the Show going over to take the title. The APA Radicals match was average, with Perry Saturn getting knocked out almost as bad as Mark Hunt at UFC 160 this past Saturday night. The medal ceremony segment with Kurt Angle was gold, with Shane McMahon interrupting and taking an angle slam from the 96 gold medalist. Finally, the main event for the WWF Tag Team titles was a classic. I'm trying to breeze through all the recap here. Like, I mean, thank you for leaving a lot of feedback, Andrew, but like a lot of this is just like, you're just describing what happened on the show. This match had great storytelling, psychology, and hot crowd, and fast-paced action. Hunter's gutsy effort with the torn quad makes the match memorable, even if WWE tries to erase it from our memories. That match will go down as one of the greatest tag matches and free TV matches in pro wrestling history because of that.
Yeah. I'm not going to get into a big Benoit thing. I just, I'm so tired of discussing all this. Next up. Too bad the current product isn't up to these standards. Fantastic interplay between JR and Heyman, quite possibly the best commentary duo of the 21st century so far. The show was right on the heels of the Judgment Day pay-per-view, and the crowd was hot. The matches were logical steps for the most part, and the storylines were easy to follow. What stuck out to me the most was the depth and quality of the roster. Even Perry Saturn is preferable to the sack of riders today. To the sack riders of today? What does that mean?
He's calling him Sack instead of Zach.
Oh, to the Sack Riders of today.
Oh, okay. Strange. It's like a play on words.
The main event was better than 85% of the matches we see on pay-per-views currently. While I do feel conflicted and a little uneasy at watching Chris Benoit in action, I still think he was a fantastic wrestler. Triple H showed just how much he was willing to sacrifice for the company by taking the walls on the announce table after tearing his quad. Overall, a very good show. 8.5 Flair pratfalls out of 10.
Gaurav Kumar from India. Good lord, where do I start? It was so refreshing to go back and watch an episode of Raw from the Attitude Era. The main event match was one of the best matches in Raw history. Props to Hunter for finishing the match even though he tore his quad. It looked brutal. I remember watching Hunter's interview on Off the Record with Landsberg where he describes this incident and how much pain he was in. The banter between Ross and Heyman on commentary was priceless. God, I wish Heyman starts doing commentary on Raw again. Since Cole is now a babyface, Heyman can be the heel color commentator. Cause I can wipe a monkey's... It just sucks now. What do you guys think? Good show. 9 torn quads of Triple H out of 10.
Go to Doc Scott from the UK. Longtime listener. Second piece of feedback. Oh man, 2001 was the last year I fully enjoyed wrestling. Being a huge Stone Cold fan, this was a treat to watch. I know a lot of people didn't like the heel Austin, and he himself has said it was probably bad for business, but for me personally, I love the heel Austin of 2001. He played it so well. His timing, mannerisms, pauses, glares, everything was just perfect. People genuinely hated him, and he seemed like he was really enjoying himself. The beatdown he and Triple H gave to the Hardys and Lita is still shocking when you watch it today. Anyway, I'm off topic already. The opening promo was Austin at his heel best. Angry, slightly unhinged, paranoid, baiting the crowd, awesome. Just seeing how different the tone of the show was to today is amazing. The hardcore match was brutal by today's standards. I know John wouldn't like the headshots Big Show took, but again, it highlights the difference 10 years makes. Seeing backstage skits with Kurt Angle, the APA, Stone Cold, the Dead Man, Eddie Guerrero, the Hardys genuinely made me smile. Also, hearing the Raw's War theme and hearing JR alongside Paul Heyman on commentary brought a smile to my face as well. Seeing Triple H as a heel is so much more watchable than trying to watch him today as a babyface. If he's going to stick around in the ring in 2013, he needs to turn heel ASAP. I'm going to cut to the chase as I'm trying to beat the deadline for feedback. What a main event. A pay-per-view caliber match. All four guys worked a great old-school match. Although the match was chaotic at times, it was still a simple storytelling with clear distinctions between the despicable heels and the good guys who the crowd wants to win. Take notice, Sheamus. Damn, seeing Triple H man up and soldier through what must have been agony is still unbelievable to watch. Whatever you think about the game, you have to take your hat off to him. That was fucking crazy. A great end to a great Raw from the last great period in WWE television. Problem is that tonight's Raw felt like 6 hours instead of three. 10 torn quads out of 10. And he also mentions he is DJing in Toronto at the end of June. So you can go to the feedback there if you want to check out Doc from the UK.
That's pretty cool.
DJing.
All right, finally, we got a Bavin from New Jersey who says, it's weird that you guys picked the show because a couple of days prior, I was watching clips of it on YouTube, though the date was wrong on the video. From Jericho calling Austin a slut to Shane's lame-ass promo, but that ankle slam from the podium to the confetti was an awesome visual. Paul Heyman and JR commentating together was so good. Their back and forth was so much better than Cole and Lawler. The main event was awesome. The crowd and the wrestlers brought it. And even though I don't like Triple H, the man is tough in gutting through a torn quad and breaking the walls of Jericho and taking the walls of Jericho. A great show overall, 8 out of 10.
All right. Well, thank you to those of you that left your feedback and analysis to the show. And that brings us to a close this week. And next week, Wei, we are going to be reviewing two separate episodes of a very popular Canadian franchise that you have worked on.
I have?
Yeah, you have.
Oh, wow. Yes, it is our good friend and colleagues, Jason Agnew's classic famed Canadian television show, The Conventioneers. Some of you might have only heard about it through the law, but if you guys haven't seen it, we want to go through two of the episodes, and much of this is in preparation because the Conventioneers are trying to make a comeback right now, and what better way to bring some publicity to that front than to review two of their classic wrestling and MMA themed episodes, the first of which, it's Jason Agnew and Matt. They basically do a Streeter type of show where they just go to conventions and bug people. But in the case of this wrestling show, they went to WWE Raw taping in Toronto, and they were just talking to a lot of the wrestling fans that were about to go into Raw. And
including a young Braden Harrington, our current operator.
No way.
He's in both shows.
Oh, shut up. Really?
Yes.
Well, aside from that, I just remember that one moment from this Raw show featuring this man named Andrew, who has gone on to become something of a cult legend amongst Conventioneers fans. And, you know, if anybody sees this, you'll know exactly why. This was awesome.
All right. And the other episode took place at the UFC Fan Expo, the weekend of UFC 129, their big show at the Rogers Center with George St. Pierre and Jake Shields. So we will be reviewing both the Raw episode and the UFC Fan Expo editions of the show. So that's coming up next week.
How can people find those?
We will post them. They're on YouTube, aren't they?
They should be.
Well, let's check.
Yeah, because I don't know if ITV still has them up. But yeah, while John does that, I'd like to mention that if you found our show through iTunes, we've finally decided to switch
servers. So now a lot of our speeds should be better. I'm hearing that some of you might be seeing doubles in your feed if you're already subscribed. Unfortunately, that's just one of the side effects that has to come with this. It was trust us, it was the easiest way for us to make this migration from Podbean over to our own servers without there being too much hassle. But anyway, go to iTunes right now, subscribe, and if you like our shows, please leave a rating for us, leave a comment. Like, it, you know, it might be a lot of work for some of you, but like, it means a lot for all of us in our rating, in our standing overall on iTunes. So if you like our shows, please go up there and put a rating and a review.
Yeah. So, and I want to thank Wei, who really tackled this whole migration process. I know a lot of you have been frustrated with problems we've had in the past with Podbean and with the download times, and Wei tackled this project.
I was getting sick
head on.
I was getting sick of it, just like everybody else.
Yeah. So yeah, we are hopeful that all those issues are completely behind us now. We will continue to post the shows on Podbean for a few more weeks, and then that feed is going to be completely done with. Mm-hmm. There will be no more Podbean affiliation with us. It's going to be all through the Fight Network site, which is what it should have been to begin with.
Yeah.
But extenuating circumstances, we weren't able to launch it. But now we have that capability. So
along with that, for people who you know, like to download the shows online, if you go to fightnetwork.com/news/podcast right now, you'll actually find our completely redesigned podcast section where you can filter out all the shows from our archives. You just go to there, you click on filter by title, and you can filter out all of our shows, whether it be Review Away, Review Raw, Live Audio Wrestling, Japanese Audio Wrestling, the MMA Report, a huge massive archive of full law interviews. Just go to that site, click filter, and then they're all there.
Yeah, so you can go check that out. You can also get all the archives on the message board. You can see there over at lawradio.proboards.com, and it's all free. So how can you argue with that? And we have located the show online, and who should be in the screen grab right there? Mr. Ting.
Oh, my God.
Then Braden.
Braden
so,
Harrington.
Yeah.
So we'll post links to those on the message board on the feedback threads for these shows. So
yes. And
out.
If you want to donate to the concrashersTV.com is where you can go, as Jason Agner and Matt Chin are raising funds to film 6 new episodes of what is now known as the Concrashers.
Concrashers.
There you go.
Yeah.
So you can go over there to donate. We'll be chatting about Fuck, I'm going to call it the Conventioners 10 million times. But that's technically
Concrashers.
Fuck it. I don't have any legal obligations.
Yeah.
Whatever.
All right.
Anyway, that's coming up next week on the show. Of course, liveaudiowrestling.com is where you can grab all of our shows. Subscribe to Live Audio Wrestling on iTunes. You can give us a follow at Law Radio, at I Am John Pollock, at Wei0937, and as Wei scrolls through...
We still got a week for our contest.
Oh, let's quickly... This contest, Wei, has quickly become my... This might have surpassed the rap lyric contest.
Yeah, I think it might have.
We have got some great entries so far.
You know what? Why don't we play one of them to go out?
That's a great idea.
Okay.
Here is one of them.
By the way, for people who don't know, let me just quickly explain. So a few weeks ago, John and I received this strange tweet from a listener, and it was a video of him that he recorded while he was high. And as he was high, he somehow recorded this like strange, but oddly captivating rap. Would you say? Like a free-flowing type of
you
rap.
And I both had the same.
We say this for Jay, we say this for Pay, we say this for who? Way say, way in the John Pollock.
That's my favorite part. Anyway, so it's a 20-second video, but then so our contest is basically we want you guys to take this video, and there's the audio and the video up there, remix it, auto-tune it, whatever you want. And so far, your submissions from all you guys have blown us away.
Yeah, some really creative stuff. I've been very, very impressed. So we'll play one to go out here. This is not an indication that this person is the front runner or anything. Just this is one of the random submissions we have got, so yep, you guys can listen to and get a grasp of what we're looking for here.
We got one more week.
Yeah, one more week to get your submissions in, and maybe later this week we'll announce what the prize is. We got to think of something really, really cool for the winner, because this has been a great contest thus far. So that is going to wrap us up. A few other things just to note. We will be back later this week with Review and Impact. Sunday night, of course, we've got The Law at 11 Eastern after Slammiversary, and also Friday afternoon, we're going to be putting up a new show that myself and Court Bauer from MLW.com, we are going to be partnering up to do a show once or twice a month where we're not really quite sure what the show is going to be. I'm a little concerned, Way, that people are sick of my voice at this point. The last thing need is another show with me in it. So we're going to see how this thing grows. We're going to be chatting about some current topics and just see where the show grows from there. But episode one is going to be up this Friday, and I really encourage people's feedback, whether it is positive or constructive criticism. We want to hear from you, and it'll be about a half hour or so just chatting some news topics. I always love chatting with Court Bauer. So
one of my favorite podcasts, MLW Radio.
So there you go. So we'll be doing that together, and we're going to hopefully do it like twice a month, something like that. So that is coming up on Friday. You can look out for that and lots of other shows over at liveaudiowrestling.com. So we are getting out of here with one of our contest submissions.
Yo, dude, man.
Hey, what up, dog?
What up, dog?
Review away. 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 Review away.